Sox fans, welcome back to Hot Takes and Heaters. He is Danny Miller. I am Nick Borowski. This is your MLB-centric podcast for future Sox. Thank you so much for joining us. Jump in. Spring training on its way here. Cactus League action going on. Games just about every day here leading up to opening day later in March. Danny, you catching some spring training action?
As much as I can take in at the moment. I, you know, I'm a busy man, and I would like to. Well, you know what? I saw some, but I do have a grievance.
Yeah.
To kind of file. It's the same grievance that I have to file year in and year out at this time of the year, and you know, that grievance comes with a question. But what on earth is on TV in the middle of the afternoon on a weekend that we can't get more televised games?
That's an excellent question. Grievance, it's a question. I think maybe four or five televised games this spring, could be more on the radio. And then if you've got, you know, the MLB network, like today, they had the Dodgers Sox game on, and that was a free game, and you get it on the app. And then there's other little ways here and there. You know, if you're a season ticket holder, you should get the, you know, MLB TV for free. So you're listening to all audio, and it's not necessarily Sox audio. You get a lot of the away feed, but I hear you, man, especially on the weekends. There's nothing like just a lazy Sunday afternoon catching some Cactus League action. Is it just a perceived lack of interest, do you think, from fans?
I honestly have been asking this question for years. I think Ian and I have talked about it, you know, in years past, going back to the White Sox Daily and the dugout days. You know, we've been together for a few years, and all these years I asked the same question, and we never really come up with a good answer. You know, I wonder, I implore our listeners to, you know, send me something, hit me up in the chat, hit me up on Twitter, because I still refuse to call it X. Sure. you know, give me something, because I don't really think I've heard a great explanation on why this is. Especially when, you know, the owner of our favorite baseball team also has a piece of the media company that distributes his games. And I don't understand why we're not getting more of it.
It's got to be an advertising thing. There's got to be a dollars and cents reason. Now, during the week, I get it. That might be a tough listen. Now, do an encore, though. You know, like they usually do for a day Sox game during the regular season. You know, put something on in the evening. You know, everybody's home from work, whatever, and you can catch up on what's been happening. Because now it's like, you know, you get some video, and sure, it's a lot easier with social media to kind of tune in with what's been going on. And it's early still. But as things ramp up and we start getting a better picture of who's going to be on this White Sox team, I think you're going to want to watch. Now, there were some weekend games. Well, Friday was, it kicked it off against the Cubs. And then there was a game on Saturday. Did you catch that?
That was bits and pieces of it.
Okay.
I did catch bits and pieces. Unfortunately, Saturday was a pretty busy day again for me. You know, just a lot going on here at the Miller household as of late. Which, you know, getting caught up on some things and getting some things in order. And, you know, hopefully over the next few weeks here, things will start to slow down. Actually, I think I've mentioned it before on the show, but I will be out of work shortly. And then shortly after that, I'll be having some knee surgery. So I'm going to have a lot of time on my hands. And White Sox baseball, you guys better look out. If you're listening to the show right now live, or if you're listening on our podcast later, the Danny Miller is going to have a lot of time on his hands and might bombard the world with some just off the wall, crazy White Sox content. So, you know, when I've got the time to do that, I definitely will.
I envision just soon, just, you know, you sitting in an armchair, just several lung darts, one after another, watching maybe some tough early April baseball, perhaps.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of hoping that that early April baseball is not going to be the tough part of the season. I think, you know, this is when we're looking at this new defensive culture that the White Sox are putting together. Right. And you and I have talked about this a little bit in the past as well as with Ian, but I think there might be a run where we get maybe a couple of decent months out of this team that it currently as it's constructed, where, you know, maybe it's not right off the bat, but some of these guys just come out and they play good defense and they hold some teams to, you know, low scoring affairs. Maybe we get a handful of wins out of this stuff. We might have some entertaining baseball to watch, but I think it's when we get into the dog days a little bit is when we start to see that kind of come back down. I think the White Sox are going to be, you know, trade partners come the middle of the season.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about that because that you know, there's different camps that I've kind of paid attention to in terms of fans on social media, even folks that I've talked to friends, family, Sox fans, and we're making these kind of arguments. You know, you make it for, you make it against in terms of the projections that have been made by the prognosticators, the experts out there that know it all and have laid it down. So right now, as we record, Sox are 1-4 in Cactus League play, and you didn't miss too much, Danny, over the weekend. It didn't start well, some sloppy defense, some little things that you hopefully get figured out quickly, especially by veterans. And I don't know how much stock you want to put into the whole Martin Maldonado. You know, he wasn't fully hustling out of the box, and he had to make a whole apology in front of his team. You know, Pedro with a bunch of comments after that. Look, I know Pedro wants to start things fresh. I mean, he doesn't want anything from last year hanging around, how he handled himself, how he did things, what he said. But, you know, I'm not too concerned if a 37-year-old, if that's what he is, who's probably number one depth chart right now in terms of catcher, is not sprinting out of the box. I think Sox were down 7 runs in the first game of the spring training. I don't know your thoughts.
No, I think you actually hit it pretty much right on the head there. You know, he is an older catcher. I think he was a guy that's kind of brought into, you know, I hate to use that word again, but to, you know, bring the culture of this team along, because he has been one of those guys that has been a clubhouse presence for some other teams, right? Not busting it down the line at his age and being thought of as probably the number one starter on the depth chart, I don't really mind that, because we've got to get as many miles as we can out of a 37-year-old who's had some knee and back problems in the past. You know, can I remind you of a Yasmani Grandal recently? We don't need guys missing time, right? So I get that you're trying to set the stage for, you know, what's to come in the season. And you're trying to get some of these young kids that you're going to bring along to, you know, fall into step with the new culture and the new brand of what Pedro was trying to establish last year and didn't seem to get that going. But, I mean, let's be realistic here. You know, it is the first, second game. I don't care if you're opening your spring training against the Cubs. You know, if we're going to talk about, like, you know, the first game of spring training is the White Sox World Series, well, you know, forget about it. Like, that's not the kind of culture that I want to instill. You know what I mean? Let's get some things rolling in the right direction, but let's not get ourselves injured and hurt, and especially in games where it's late in the game and you're down a bunch. I don't really care.
Yeah, I think I could. I think Pedro's trying to make up a little bit for his lack of control last year, and things got off the rails. He didn't know how to get them back on, and he started throwing Corey Lee and Oscar Colas under the bus instead of probably other guys that he should have, that, you know, have a little bit more veteran presence. So I don't know if he was making a, you know, point to call Martin Maldonado out right away to kind of, you know, set things right. I don't know, set some sort of tone. Whatever. If that's what he wants to do, that's what he wants to do. But, you know, you talk about maybe some exciting baseball in April. And, you know, we for several years have heard from the experts, the Sox have got it, you know, especially on paper. Watch out for this team, potentially ALCS, maybe World Series. And, of course, I'm going a couple years back now. And the Sox didn't hit those measures. They fell well short.
You don't say.
Yeah. Figured you'd fire up a heater at this point, but there you go.
I mean, the show is called Hot Takes and Heaters. I'm just going to go ahead and let one rip.
I'm getting to know you better. So with a negative spin on the 2024 White Sox right now, and everybody down on them that makes the expert predictions, could there be an opposite effect of that people underestimate what maybe this team could do now that there perhaps is a different culture? Now, there are guys that are fighting for their baseball careers, you know, in this White Sox camp. Like, this could be their last run. It could be a pretty spirited, energetic spring training for them because they know what's at stake. You know, there are some jobs that can be won. You know, not everything's a foregone conclusion with this roster. And that's exciting to me, which is why you kind of want to watch and pay attention a little bit. It's not just, hey, there's not much going on with this team. Everything's been figured out. That's not the case with this White Sox club. You know, there's a lot of different positions, especially in the bullpen and with guys like Jesse Schultens going down with Tommy John. You know, we're trying to figure out new arms almost every day of who can be where. Do you think that energy, that type of spirit, that fight, can that continue into the regular season? Or do you feel, I made it? I'm on the club. Like, I'm a made man. I can take the foot off the gas a little bit. And so that grittiness, that energy of, you know, you're fighting, you're giving it absolutely everything. It's the Hans or Alberto effect. It kind of dies off once the season starts because you rest a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that kind of plays into what we were just talking about with Martin Maldonado and Pedro kind of going in and saying things, you know, like you need to apologize to your teammates and go out in the media and you know, kind of expressing some displeasure with that type of mentality. And I think he was trying to send the message of, you know, I don't care if you're a veteran or not, I'm going to hold you accountable. And maybe that kind of shows some of the rest of these guys that they're going to be held accountable. But then, you know, just to go on more with your point there and the question, I think as we get into the season, I think that's exactly what they're trying to avoid, right? I think they're trying to kind of set this tone and keep that tone for as long as possible. Now, you know, the prognosticators that you bring up, mm-hmm. And the so-called experts, and you know, I feel like you don't really need to be an expert to know that this team is not going to be some, you know, massive juggernaut in the AL Central like it was once thought, you know, in recent years. I don't know how easy or how difficult, I should say, maybe it is going to be to maintain that kind of, you know, process and that mentality of going out and fighting to play every day when you just can't seem to win. You know, Steve Stone, and I'm sure we're going to get into this a little bit, yeah, or, you know, yeah, but Steve Stone made the prediction the other day that the Sox, I think it was like the third or fourth inning of the game on, was it Saturday or Sunday?
Early. Yeah.
Yeah. The Sox are going to win 10 more games than last year, right? Which, you know, fine, fantastic. It still doesn't really put big numbers on the board in the W column. I find that Pedro's going to find it difficult to keep the team amped up when you're going through those kinds of struggles.
Yeah. I, you know, that was an early call by Stone, and he was kind of referencing the defense. You know, things have changed. They've, you know, you know, come out and got De Jong and Lopez, and they're trying to get a better up the middle. And there was a lot of references to culture and how things are trying to change. And Pedro has learned from his ways, are going to be doing this, doing that. And Stone flat out said, you know, I expect, you know, a 10 wins better this year, which would put it at 71. Again, nothing to write home, nothing to get excited about at all. And at this type of year, you know, if you're more of the mindset as a fan of numbers don't really matter, records don't matter too much. You know, this is a placeholder year. You know, this is to watch development, you know, see if guys can figure it out that might be on this team moving forward. We're keeping all eyes on Ramos and Montgomery. What's Nastrini got? Leisure, Caro. You know, there's others. And so if that's your mindset as a Sox fan, who cares if they've got 71 wins? I honestly, if they've got 65 wins, but there's been some development and there's been, you know, you could see that there's some change and something is clicked that wasn't there last year. Now you got a few guys, several guys that are either this could be their last hurrah in their contract with the Sox, or they're on a 1-year deal. So that's the other flip of that, of you could have some great chemistry. Maybe they bring them back, but then you're kind of putting a stop on guys like Ramos and Montgomery. So what does 71 wins really get you? I mean, if it's bad baseball and you get to 71 somehow because you outslug the opponent a few games, you know, during the season, are you going to feel any better? I think from my perspective as a Sox fan, I just want to see a completely better brand of baseball. You know, I don't want to see sloppy play, complacency, you know, just lethargic apathy, just like they almost don't care. The hustling that I have seen down to first, I mean, Colas busting it, Robert's been busting it. I mean, that stuff's fun right now because we didn't see it. Can it carry through the whole spring and into the season? That goes to your point of, is there a drop-off point? You know, is there a, okay, you hit your high watermark, you know, 2024 Sox, you know, you bonded, everybody's got the energy, but you know, at the end of the day, it's like, well, the talent kind of, you know, shows and speaks eventually, of course, when you get to the dog days of summer.
Right. Yeah, I agreed 100%. I mean, we've been talking about this pretty much all spring. Just being able to see some entertaining baseball in the fact of, you know, we're not really looking for W's, right? Because we know we're not going to see 90 to 100 wins. We're probably looking more at, you know, individual performances. You know, we're looking for some seasons out of some guys that haven't had one in a while. You know, and I don't want to throw out guys like Yoan Moncada or, you know, Aloy, who are looking at, you're going to be short-lived here. Unless they have monster breakout seasons, I don't see the White Sox resigning some of these guys. So, you know, they're going to want big contracts. But, you know, Luis Robert Jr., I want to see him have that big year. Maybe if Aloy does have, you know, he came out and predicted, it's got to be about a month ago now, that he was going to hit 40 bombs, right? If he does that, I mean, is he a viable DH? And do we maybe want to sign him? You know, those types of things, I'm down to see. But I really don't expect
that's,
a lot.
That's interesting. I mean, that's really interesting. If you're going forward and you're going to, you know, everybody's on board, he's on board, everybody that, hey, I'm going to be the DH. He is, I don't want to say he's white hot right now. Okay, we're only five
fantastic
games
start.
In, but 5-for-8, a pair of doubles, 4 RBIs, 7 total bases. I mean, he's hitting the ball on the screws. He blasted one to deep, I think, right center, I believe, against the Dodgers this afternoon. And he's been looking good and comfortable at the plate. So, again, it's early, but with all eyes on guys like him, with I want to play 150 with Robert and Moncada. Basically, I want all three of us to play in 95% of the games or whatever that would be. And for him to be kind of swinging the bat like this, we're all just holding our breath, you know, stay healthy, stay healthy, stay healthy at this point.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, health is always going to be something that, you know, we're going to be keeping an eye on. You know, unfortunately we don't have the years and years and years where the White Sox were one of the luckiest organizations health-wise. It's kind of gone exactly the opposite since our friend Herm Schneider left the organization. I mean, you would think that guy was some kind of shaman doing, you know, he was in the clubhouse like Pedro Serrano with his, yeah, you know, chickens and hats for bats and whatnot.
And he always,
you know
what I mean? Danny had the largest towel known to man, always draped around his shoulder. It was like a double beach towel, just in case I need a huge towel.
I'm sure he had that thing. That towel was probably laced with essential oils and sage and all kinds of other stuff to keep the demons away, you know what I mean? Because as soon as he was gone, man, it was like night and day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that changes whatever type of program that they had with the White Sox. That has changed. It sounds like they finally kind of caught up with maybe the rest of the league. Sox bringing in a dietitian and someone for mental health as well to work with players and staff, all things that, you know, the Sox have just been late to the game on. They've been late to the game on a lot of things. And so hopefully things are going in a different direction. You know, I don't know how much credit you give to Getz and others, but that's new. We haven't seen that type of stuff. And if that continues, this is going to take some time. That's why, you know, for us to bounce back and think, well, the Sox, even though it's the AL Central, going to get right back in it in 2024. There was a lot of, I think, vetting and figuring out, even though Reinsdorf, you know, with his big comments of, well, we're going to bring Chris Getz in because he knows the organization. He won't have to go through, you know, this process of checking in on everything. If you bring somebody from the outside organization, they're going to have to do their due diligence, or we're already a year behind. If you bring in somebody experienced that knows how to do this job, they know exactly where to go with growing edges, with problem areas, with success areas, who to talk to. You know, Chris Getz is drinking from a fire hose. So this is going to be a process, no doubt. Even though he's been with the organization, it's going to take some time. It seems like they're really trying to, I don't want to say redo, but reimagine the guts of the organization. And that trickle down is going to be a process. Want to talk about a guy from today's game, Danny. I watched most of this game, Dodgers, White Sox. Of course, Shohei Ohtani's debut with the Dodgers. They threw that up on MLB TV. And my guy, Garrett Crochet, on the hill. And this is a guy we all talked about a couple weeks ago. And I think everybody's kind of scratching their head of a starter. Really? Are they really giving this guy an opportunity to be in the rotation? And, you know, the fact that it's being talked about, I think, well, they've obviously done some of their homework during the offseason. They know what kind of buildup he has done. But he is new to this, terribly new to this. But, boy, he looked good today, Danny. I don't know if you heard anything about that.
Yeah, no. I was unfortunately at work for the better part of that game. For all of it. I don't even think I was out of work by the time it ended. But, you know, I tried to kind of keep up with it. I was outside for a lot of the day, so I couldn't get any kind of radio broadcast or anything. I'm not even sure if it was broadcast, ESPN 1000. But, you know, my phone was buzzing a lot. I've got my my Twitter notifications.
You got a Crochet notification?
Well, you know, all my Twitter notifications. And I did see, I mean, the first thing I saw was that Garrett Crochet strikes out Shohei Ohtani in the first inning with a 100-mile-an-hour heater.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, excuse me, a little dry. I got to tell you that, yeah, my humor too sometimes. To see that he hit triple digits in the first inning, in his first start in a White Sox uniform. Now, you know, some folks will say, well, it doesn't really count because it's spring training. It's not his first start. But, you know, let's be honest. He comes out in the first inning and he faces three of the toughest hitters in baseball right off the bat. But the strikeout, Gerald Crochet, and he's up to triple digits again, which we have talked about ad nauseum since last year. You and I talked about it with Ian when we had you on our show, when it was White Sox Daily. I think myself and your partner on Good Guys Talk Back, I believe, also talked about this. The fact that he was not able to hit, you know, anything higher than 96 miles an hour, 95, 96. So he throws it straight as an arrow. He's just throwing darts up there that he's getting teed off on. We've got a Gerrit Crochet that's hitting triple digits again, and he's got himself another out pitch. And when you're hitting triple digits, that just makes his changeup and his off speed stuff that much better.
Yeah. He was not just throwing today. He was pitching. Which is what I like to see. The velocity, obviously, there, which is exciting. That brings him back to that dangerous element that he had when we first saw him years ago in 2020. But he pitched in effectively to those lefties. He was not afraid to go in. He got a couple of those guys, you know, he sawed them off pretty much without breaking a bat. A little jam shot dribblers in the middle of the infield that were gobbled up by, I think, DeJong or Lopez. And then he rode the elevator, which I like to talk about as a former pitcher way back when in high school and some college. You're mixing up the eye level. Okay. That's what we've had problems with certain guys, like even Kopech and Giolito at times where you could throw hard and there is a confidence maybe. You're just not able to hit spots, move it around, and you're just pumping it in. You got no chance. You absolutely have no chance. They'll sit on that no matter how hard you throw. Gerrit Crochet was up and down today, which I love. You know, he was playing like above the hands. He was going down low in the strike zone. Again, he was an inning in two thirds, so it wasn't an advanced start by any means, but which was expected. I thought he was only going to go an inning, but I like to see that. You know, I think he's definitely purposely working on something. Whatever he was working on, I think he was achieving it because there was success. And just to take that away from today's game, it was a frustrating game. But it's the Dodgers. I think they're 5-0 now in spring training. To take that away, that was exciting.
Yeah, 100% agreed. And you know, the thing about. The only real question I have about Gerrit Crochet being a starter, now that I see he's got that velocity back up, and, you know, that velocity was a big question for me coming into this season. But now that it's there, I only have one question that remains, and that is, how many innings can you expect to get out of a guy who went through Tommy John surgery and then only pitched out of a bullpen role? How much, you know, stretching out has he gotten? You know, he could have been working out all offseason. That's fine. That's fantastic. But when we're talking about getting up to game speed and being out there on an actual baseball diamond, you know, you as a former pitcher yourself, and I as a former pitcher myself, know all well and fine that things are different when you've got an MLB batter in the box and you're being asked to go, you know, minimum these days, I feel like it's minimum five innings. You know, it used to be you want to get six or seven, maybe even eight out of your starter, but we're going back a ways, you know, to get up to that point. But how many innings do you feel like you can get out of Gerrit Crochet as a starter and not, you know, have him run into a wall? Like Ian says in the comments here, 75 to 100 is where they run into a wall unless their name is Justin Verlander. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what to expect. I don't know if he's going to start the season in the rotation or if they move him into the rotation later. I'm not sure what the plan is there, but, you know, it's been talked about a lot that he's been working. And
that is difficult for a guy like Gerrit Crochet. You know, quietly, which it might be talked about later in the season, that there is a limit on him. You'd have to imagine they did it with Kopech, you know, after he came back, you know, from his injury. He's going to have dead arm periods. He's going to have endurance issues. I mean, pitchers talked about it last year, you know, with the new rules in place. Veteran pitchers were like, whoa, it's going to take me a while to get, acclimated to the speed of the game. And for a guy like Garrett Crochet that hasn't been in that role, he's going to have that going on. Plus, he's going to have kind of just getting his body used to that, the pacing. And then there's the velocity question of, is he just jacked right now, emotion, and he's running on adrenaline? It was against the Dodgers. And is he going to come down from that? How is he going to feel health-wise, after logging some of these innings as spring training goes on? I mean, there's a lot to factor in. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of an overreaction to already start drooling and thinking of him, in the rotation for sure. I just like what I saw. I like what I saw from him and what he was trying to do and just that snapshot.
It's hard not to drool, though. It's hard not to.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think for him too, how great is that for the confidence, right? He gets to walk away from this and, he's going to reflect on this, tonight, tomorrow. It's like, wow, I went toe to toe with one of the greatest baseball players right now. Granted, his first game and everything, but Shohei hit a home run. Okay. There's no rust on Ohtani. He's a super freak. He's unbelievable, but Crochet should take away some confidence. And I think Grifol got him out when he got him out to leave that good taste in his mouth of, hey, this was a good outing for you, kid. This is something to build on. And, this game is so mental that's helpful moving forward.
Yeah, 100%. Leave him on a high note. Leave him feeling good about himself. And, like I said earlier on, to go out there and face maybe the most potent lineup in Major League Baseball right now, and to face three of the best hitters in baseball back to back to back in the first inning, and come out of that unscathed for the most part, I'd say is pretty fantastic. You're going to leave on a high note. And I think that just does nothing but boost his confidence. But,
yeah,
just going back to you saying, drooling over, results this early on. I get that. I get that it's not something we want to do. It's not something that you can expect day in and day out. We hope for it. You hope that you get those kind of results, on a much larger scale. We get a larger sample size going here. You hope that trend continues down the line, right?
And that was Carlos Rodon a couple of years ago.
Right.
Absolutely. We were all kind of waiting. And then, of course, he fell off towards the end of that season. I think it was just – it got to him, man, the endurance. He was kind of in uncharted territory. And we were – but he carried that pitching staff for a while. I mean, it was like we were waiting for that bubble to burst. And that's happened before with rotations where – wow, where'd this guy come from? Or this guy all of a sudden has figured it out and we're all waiting. When's the drop off? And there is no drop off.
Maybe that's the banister effect.
I've been wondering when we'd see a banister effect. It could be. Grifol has talked about how amazing some of the pitch grips and mechanics he's seen so early in camp are. So we shouldn't laugh about that. Maybe
guys are dialed in. They're ready to go with their new pitch grips. Pitch grips look great.
Yeah. So Pete, speaking of pitching, there was a transaction today. Here
we are. 30
Danny Miller. This is from MLB trade rumors. White Sox officially announced their previously reported trade with the Cubs, acquiring left-hander Bailey Horn to open a spot for Horn on their 40-man roster. They have moved, of course, Jesse Schultens to the 60-day injured list. He's going to have Tommy John. And the Sox sent to the Cubs Matthew Thompson. I'm assuming you and Ian have talked about not only Bailey Horn, but also Matthew Thompson over the years for White Sox Daily. What were your reactions when you heard about this transaction?
Well, first of all, I was wondering why. it didn't come out until later. I mean, honestly, you're trading a prospect that's struggled a bit for another prospect that struggled a bit. Neither one of them has really made neither one of them made the impact that they kind of hoped for, you know, when they were drafted. The reunion with Bailey Horn, sure, fine. It's great. He's not going to crack the top 30 on anybody's list in the White Sox organization. But really, the question was why. And then we found out shortly after. And that was to make room. If originally it was to make what we thought was to make room for, you know, Cody Bellinger to be signed for the Cubs. They had to open up a roster spot. But it turns out the White Sox had to open up a roster spot, too.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on Matthew Thompson? Is it kind of a lateral trade? Is it you just, you know, what's the point?
Well, Matt Thompson, you know, he's been in the system for a few years now. And it just never worked out. There was a time when
I've heard that before with certain
right. Well, I mean, you know, they were all kind of hyped up. Him, Dahlquist, and Jared Kelly were all kind of hyped to be, you know, the next rising stars to come through the system. And all three of them have kind of struggled to get going. Shockingly enough, Ian and I didn't talk much about Bailey Horn ever. So, you know, it wasn't that there wasn't expectations for him. I just don't think that he was on the same level of expectations of any of those other three guys. So when you see that the Cubs are taking Matt Thompson and giving us Bailey Horn back, it's one of those things that I'm not mad about it because I know the guy just had high expectations and didn't. He just failed to meet them, you know, and I'm not poo-pooing on the guy. He was thrown into a situation where he basically dominated his entire life, and now he's got to play against better talent, and, you know, I think he kind of plateaued.
Bailey Horn is just it's a fun name to say, you know.
It is, and, you know, if he can fix command issues, he could be somebody, but I, you know, it's something they've been working on for years and it's never materialized for him either.
Speaking of fun names to say, we got our first taste of John Schriffen, the play-by-play man for the Chicago White Sox, the man in charge. He called a couple games Friday and Saturday. I don't know if you caught any of the audio or any of the back and forth between him and Stone.
I did actually. And you know, like we spoke about a few weeks ago, my only background on him was watching highlight videos, right? And I went back and looked on YouTube and Twitter and found some video of him. And unfortunately, when you do that, you kind of come up with highlight reel calls, right? You know, you get a lot of football that he did. And those plays, those highlight type plays, probably pretty easy for most sports announcers to get hyped up and get rolling and sound good. You know, obviously some do it better than others, but he sounded great in those clips. But what I heard from him so far in Sox Spring is he actually works well with Steve, which Steve Stone's going to raise anybody's game, mm-hmm. I think. He's just that good. But I really like John. I think he made some really good calls. He made some fun calls. You know, we had the diving catch the other day that I heard, a blurb on. I didn't get a chance to see it, but I heard him get a little hype for that. And I heard another home run shot call that was pretty good. So, you know, early on, is he perfect? No. But I think, you know, just as you and I are going to take some time to gel, you know, here, we were afforded that opportunity having Ian on with us before. We're both pretty comfortable with him. But, you know, I think good things can come from him being in the box with Steve. Jason, but...
No, and I think that's going to be the problem. And that was Benetti's problem when he took over Hawk. You know, of course, Hawk kind of fell off over the last, you know, couple of years of his run. And there was an icy relationship between Stone and himself. But I grew up listening to Pachoric and Hawk. And that was just the soundtrack of my summers. You know, Rooney and Farmer in the car when we were going anywhere on the
great
radio.
Great combo. You know, wimpy, like you bring up. He was, you know,
so, you know, you're comparing the current to the previous, and Benetti, you know, he had his own kind of thing, right? He had his own, he was different. He had his own way of doing things. He had his own kind of personality, how he wanted to run a game. You know, and he obviously had a lot of other stuff going on. He's a professional broadcaster. I thought he got along with Stone pretty well. I thought he brought the best out of Stone, something that, you know, wasn't happening with Hawk towards the later years there. So yeah, it's going to take some time with Triffin. I mean, the Sox hired, in my mind, a professional broadcaster, and that's what he sounds like right now. I mean, to react any more is just an extreme overreaction, but that's what we're doing, right? Just to talk about him at all after a couple games is an overreaction, but that's all we've got. I want him to just be a little bit more in tune to, like, you know, just like White Sox history, which is going to take time. It's going to take time for me to listen to him and feel like this is like second nature talking about the White Sox, and he can compare maybe other players or other eras or, you know, different things that have happened throughout the history, just like a second language. You know, that's going to take time. And that's like just me as a fan, what I like, you know, out of hearing somebody in the booth. Hawk lived it, right? Like Hawk, like, was around for every big thing for many, many years. Benetti grew up a Sox fan. Schriffen's kind of brand new to Chicago and the Sox altogether. So, I gotta wait. He'll get better. But I think, to your point, what we can hope for right now is that there's just chemistry between Schriffen and Stone, and they both, you know, try to help each other out, make each other better. And, you know, what a great guy to have, I think, in the booth when you have got young pitchers, which the Sox do, is Steve Stone. I mean, whatever you think about him on social media, I mean, he is a great listen when it comes to pitching. And I Absolutely. Hope Schriffen taps into that with all the arms that we're going to see this spring and beyond.
100%. You know, Steve Stone might as well have a crystal ball up there half, you know, more than half the time. I mean, you listen to the guy, he's telling you what the next pitch is going to be. Now, you know, part of that comes from being, you know, a former pitcher himself, but also comes from being a student of the game. He's kept up with all the changes that have been made out throughout, you know, time. Steve Stone might be a little bit long in the tooth, but continues to change and evolve with the game. And, you know, if John Schriffen can pick up any of that from him, I think we might have ourselves a decent combo, you know. But that remains to be seen, right?
Yeah, it's terribly early, but, you know, we got a taste of it over the first couple games. And Friday, of course, was absolutely rough against the Cubs. But, you know, I didn't mind the broadcast. It's going to take me just a little bit of time. And honestly, I was around Hawk for so long, and I just loved Hawk. I loved him because he emulated, I think, how like a lot of fans felt. You know, like, he was angry, he was pissed. There were quiet,
he was
silent
a definite
moments.
Homer.
I mean, he wasn't polished. Yeah. And I like that. And when you're listening to your home team, you want somebody in your corner.
Right.
You know, and he just had that emotion and that feeling, and he went together so well with Pachoric. And then Benetti, you know, just a professional broadcaster, but he brought a lighter side to it. He had some quirks, and I think he brought some fun out of Steve Stone. You know, I think he brought some youth out of Steve Stone. And so we'll see how this goes. Hopefully, you know, again, they just are getting along and they like each other, because it'll show through a broadcast.
Well, listen, this is one more reason why I say, why are we broadcasting more games?
Yeah.
Why don't we have the guys in the booth working together more? It's spring training for them too, especially when you've got a new pairing.
Yeah.
But, I won't beat that horse.
And so many ways to do it. I feel like there's so many opportunities, and, you know, everybody's
all these streaming services and the way that baseball is broadcast out there in so many different ways now. Like, we should have more than five televised games.
And you might say, look, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm just not gonna watch it. I'm not gonna invest. But, you know, if it's on in the evening as an encore, I think you'll tune in. And if you just don't know this team, that I'm watching this team on Friday and Saturday, I'm like, who are these guys? You know, I mean, you know, you read up on it, and then there's been, you know, enough articles and what have you on kind of like some of the off-season developments. And I try to follow this team as close as I absolutely can, and I know you do as well, and so many others. But still, there's something to match a name to a face and everything like that. This is the year where I would like to watch more games because there's so many question marks out there.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. And I do want to address a question in the chat. By the way, guys, thank you for really rolling. The chat's been rolling tonight, almost to the point where, you know, we can't keep up without getting off topic. So I apologize for us not getting more involved there. But I do want to address this one question by Juki Holick. He says us Royals fans spring train with the Rangers, and was asked if that was normal. Is there a stadium that Chicago Sox share in spring training? And the answer to that is yes. We share a facility with the team they played against this afternoon, the Los Angeles Dodgers. So Camelback Ranch is a two-team facility.
Yeah, it's a beautiful facility, I think. I'll be out there in a couple weeks, actually, seeing some Tim Hill action and Mike Moustakas. By the way, speaking of Mike Moustakas, Danny, John Schriffen just about lost his mind when Mike Moustakas made a over-the-shoulder catch. I believe it was Future Sox that tweeted it out. I saw the video. He made an over-the-shoulder catch running towards right field in foul territory. And Schriffen, man, don't tell him it's just spring training. I mean, he opened up. The excitement meter was off the charts.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I was saying I feel like he's going to be okay. Because, you know, as it was, again, pointed out in our chat, the hosts always seem to show their love for the White Sox, whether they've been here for forever or they're brand new. And yeah, hearing that call was something for sure.
I don't know if you've caught anything from Ken Rosenthal just recently, maybe today, a couple days ago, but from what he is talking about in terms of White Sox camp, that there's positive vibes going around.
I did catch that.
There's some excitement. And you know, I've seen some arguments on social media. I've seen some folks really starting to talk themselves into already. And I'm not telling anybody how to fan, man. That's point number one. You fan how you want to fan. And, you know, I have not seen anything yet to get me at all thinking of like, well, this team could be hanging around in you know, by the deadline or anything like that. But I have seen some conversation of, well, you know, if this goes and this goes, and you never know. The positive vibes thing is wonderful, of course. You want that. But it's the beginning of spring training, Danny. It's like you'd expect positive vibes.
You yeah, know, absolutely.
It's like you're in that honeymoon phase right now where baseball is back. We get to play a child's game in beautiful weather, and there's guys that are in new uniforms, change of scenery.
Yeah, oh, new uniforms. Have that going on. New uniforms for the whole league.
Yes, right. That's right.
It was a big topic here recently.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's a handful of guys out there that, you know, they needed some pixelated screens to go out to the, you know, go out on the field up there. Woof. Those pants are something, huh?
Yeah, those are, I was telling Pat on Good Guys Talk Back, those are the, you know, those pants you'd go into like Sport Mart or Sports Authority or something years ago. And you're looking to like, you've got like a beer league softball team or something, or you're just looking for like some baseball pants, and you've got those almost transparent with the drawstring that you got to just, you know, don on. And those pants are not good. The lettering, you know, I'm a jersey guy, but I don't have a lot of like stitched name jersey. I've got two. I've got a Canerico and I've got a Burley with the big letters. I had those made at Grandstand several years ago, which is an outstanding place to get your jerseys. They do fine work. These just the look is not good. You know, and I it sounds like there's a bit of an uproar too with players. So it's not just a fan thing.
Yeah, I mean the MLBPA, the Players Union, came out and said like, hey, you know, we're going to file an official protest on this stuff. Like, you guys need to get this fixed and figured out before the regular season starts, because this is trash. I mean, some of those pants are wafer thin, for those of you who might get that reference. But
they're paper thin. During some of those drizzle games, those rain games, even like when it's getting really hot, and you know, Giolito used to sweat through his jersey just about the first or second inning. It's not going to leave a lot to the imagination in those new pants and tops.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for the moment where somebody goes like steal second base and slides and just shreds those pants to nothing, looking like Fred Flintstone out there. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to be a good look. But I don't know. We were getting a little carried away on the uniform thing. I would like to go back, you know, kind of what you were talking about and guys and the vibe and guys being, you know, like you said, guys in new uniforms, not the paper thin uniforms, but guys switching teams and, you know, finding new homes. And it is the first, you know, few weeks where these guys are actually getting to see each other's full squad, even players, you know, teammates that have been playing together for a few years. You know, some of these guys may not have seen each other over the winter. You know, you're getting everybody together. In the White Sox situation, there are, you know, new members of staff, not just coaches and you know, heads of departments like, you know, Bannister and guys of that nature, Josh Barfield. But, you know, we've heard reports that the Sox have just added numbers to their staffs, you know, behind the scenes, guys that can get one more one-on-one time and not be ignored during spring training, where you've got all your coaches working with the major league team while your minor leagues guys don't even start until the middle of the afternoon because, well, we just don't have anybody to work with you right now because everybody's working with the MLB club and the 40 man. You know, those are all positive things, and it's easy to have that positive vibe, like you're saying. Again, there's going to be a lot of moving parts to keeping this team and that C word again, that culture and those good vibes going in the right direction. The Sox are hanging their hopes on a lot of, you know, what ifs and a lot of, well, hope. You know, we hope to stay healthy. We hope that we have the best season out of, you know, Luis Robert, Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez, Andrew Vaughn, you know, Benintendi, all the guys that, you know, we're expecting to be, you know, the everyday players on this ball club. You know, we're hoping that the culture does change. We're hoping that our pitching staff, that we, you know, we did some bargain hunting, but, you know, guys that show promise, we're hoping those guys turn the corner. There's a lot of hopes, and we're hoping for a lot of things to fall into place just to get to that 75 win team. You know what I mean? So yeah, the vibes are great right now, but I wouldn't be shocked if it all collapsed before June.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a White Sox fans mentality. And I put myself in that. I'll own that because of what we've gone through the last couple of years. We've played that hope game that, you know, I see this might be number seven for you. I know someone's been counting in the chats.
Well, it's seven. I think so Stream Elements, we got to work on that. Stream Elements has got me. It counted the one off screen before the show last week and is now, it's just a running counter now. This is not seven for this particular show. This is three for this show. So I guess we're just going to do a season total at this point. I don't know.
I might need to get a bell or something and just ding it when you light one up. We can do that. I can figure that out. So
well, I was just talking about collapsing vibes, and I'm like, you know what? That calls for a leader.
Look, I love that it's positive. You know, that's great. You know, it's great that everybody's getting along. I mean, that's a good foundation to start. Can it translate into wins? You know, we're not the only team that is hoping for health and a return to accustomed levels. I mean, it's not like the other teams, not only in our division, but the rest of the league and beyond are saying, you know what, we're going to stand pat here. Let's let the White Sox catch up. Let's them figure it out so they can be on the same playing field. Everybody's looking to advance it. And they might look at us and say, well, I'm not too concerned about the Sox. And they might just want to stomp on our throats and say, I'm going to have no mercy towards this team. I'm not even going to give them a chance. So that's where this group, that whatever they do, they buy into Grifol. They, you know, they're playing for, you know, their job, their things click, whatever that is, this FAST mentality, this acronym fast. That, you know, Pedro Grifol has unleashed. They buy into it and they can live up to it with performance. And I think there is something about health, like just general, like, can you last as a young pitcher that might not have done this before? You know, can you log the innings for a full season? You know, can you hang around? Will the endurance keep up? You know, I don't know. I'm skeptical, but I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. And just for those of you who are not familiar, I mean, you have to be living under a rock at this point to not know what the whole FAST thing is for the White Sox. But, you know, Pedro came out and said that he's been saying that they want to be FAST for months. But we just recently learned that that is an acronym for fearless, aggressive, selfless, and what technically sound was the final one. So yeah, again, sounds great. Pedroisms, you know, I think we're gonna get a pretty good list of Pedroisms going on here.
There'll be a lot of jokes like that throughout.
I think he might be the next Yogi Berra. You know, we're gonna get a bunch of you know, Yogiisms out of Pedro.
Yeah, I mean, you know my thoughts on Pedro.
Why is he still here? Exactly. Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't think he's the right person, but if he's got some people around him that are going to listen to him, if that was the case last year, he had guys that wouldn't buy in. I don't know what it is, but you know, we'll see here. You know, there's a lot of spring left. There really is. One quick thing before we, you know, say goodbyes. I saw this, and I think you did too. The 100 level, which is kind of the coveted level at Sox Park for most people, you know, your lower bowl, has been really off limits for a long period of time to upper deck ticket holders. If you're in the 500 level, there is just for, I would say, most of the game. Sometimes they ease that restriction, you know, in September when obviously it's spiraled out of control. But they keep that pretty strict, especially on Fridays and Saturdays when there's larger crowds or it's a giveaway. If you've got a 500 ticket, you are not getting down to the lower level. I have not experienced that in any other ballpark, and I've been to, man, over 20 of them traveling around seeing the White Sox play. I'm free to go wherever I want, unless, of course, an area is under construction or something, obviously. Sounds like those restrictions are going to be lifted, Danny, and you might be able to go wherever you want, no matter what ticket you have.
Yeah, I wonder how that makes season ticket holders on the lower level feel. You know, they're paying a premium price for premium seating. You know, I don't really know. I am not currently a season ticket holder. I will say this, though. Aside from that, I feel like it's probably one of those things that maybe Jerry and his marketing department feel like it might be a good move for them. Simply because, one, you know, when your attendance isn't great, like it wasn't the second half of last season, and you know, hasn't really been the second half for many years before they were in that, and I'm going to use my air quotes, contention window. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, the upper deck isn't really all that busy anyway. So you could probably limit the amount of vendors you have open up there. So that's going to save him some dollars. Let's be honest. Jerry's got less people to pay, which actually I not even sure that's how that works. I think they might be paid by,
well, I mean, I think you're just, you know, yeah, the different food options, whatever vendors, like you don't have to fill those spots up there.
Right. Customer service reps that are going to be farther and fewer between. You know,
there's a souvenir security shop. There's a mini beer cave, you know, there's stuff up there that they try to give you a taste of what the 100 level is, but it's obviously not.
Yeah, they opened those new porches or whatever they want to call those up last season. Yeah, which, you know, they were cool.
Like, I think it was a High Life Landing or Blue Moon Landing. There were a couple of those.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to limit the staff that you're going to have up there, and you're going to let just folks go down and get a taste of what they can at the 100 level. I think attendance is going to be extremely low this year. Yeah. We always know April, May are tough. Once school gets out, once the summer months pop and it starts getting warm, things pick up a little bit, especially
it's
on the
still
weekend.
Cold here early on in the season.
It is, but I think it's going to be terribly low. I think, you know, it's just a matter of, will they tarp off certain sections in the 500 level and just, you know, give it that look like that's not even an option. Try to fill the lower bowl a little bit more for TV. I don't know if that even matters, but and this really is probably going to be odd to any baseball fan from a different team of like, why are you guys talking about this? Because this hasn't happened in a long, long time for Sox fans attending games.
Yeah. You know, and I saw something on social media earlier today that, you know, once this was, you know, once this became a thing, and I'm not sure how much I believe it, but somebody was trying to explain why the Sox had come up with this policy, you know, years ago. And they said something about there were, you know, people from the upper levels coming down to the lower levels and starting fights or having some sort of bad, you know, mojo going on. And that was what forced them into kind of splitting, you know, upper levels from lower levels and having to sit in your assigned seats. And, you know, you had the guest service representatives, you know, checking tickets at the top of the concourse and that whole thing. I'm not sure how that is, but we can't take a couple of isolated incidents and change the way things are done basically throughout baseball, like you're saying, where you're going to multiple stadiums, sometimes a few in a single season, you know, traveling with the ball club or just happen to be somewhere where you're catching a game at a different stadium. And none of those other stadiums are like that. And I think the White Sox are really catching a lot of flack for a lot of the changes they've made to the, you know, the fan base, the experience, the game experience. And if this is their only attempt at fixing the fan experience, well, I'm going to say it's a pretty weak attempt. Now, I'm all for it, you know, at the moment. And if they start selling out games and they want to, you know, limit that later on, fine, whatever. If you want to, you know, push it back to like the fifth inning, you can go down, you know, whatever, if the attendance is high and you don't want overcrowding down below, whatever. But right now, I think it's probably, you know, just an attempt to maybe get some more butts in the stadium. And, you know, I hope that they make some other changes along the way. I hope that they do some things to enhance the fan experience and, you know, make sure that they have concessions open in the areas where there are fans and hope those fans are hoping for a beer and a dog or a burger or whatever it is. I hope that they fix their security issues to make things a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Security last year was just super awful in the parking lots for tailgating. You know, they banned the whole thing with the umbrellas and tents and that whole nine yards. And they were even like pushing people, you know, it used to be, you could gather your group in a circle so that everybody could kind of mingle and talk together. And they were just pushing everybody up against the aisles, right up against your bumpers. I even seen a guy get his barbecue pushed up against his car and it actually splattered some grease in the car and did some damage to his paint because they told him he was too far out in the aisle.
Yeah,
that's something that needs to be cleaned up. You know, I don't know. It felt like they were just doing everything they could to step on their dicks.
I've said to people, it's not a bad stadium. When you travel around to other stadiums, I get it. It's old, but it's not a bad stadium. How it's run, it makes
that's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother story. How it's run from the outside and the inside, getting into the stadium, how things go inside, that stuff you're talking about with, you know, security and tailgatings there, how they can't figure out parking, how all that is run. gives it a really bad look. But the actual stadium, I don't mind it. You know, it doesn't have the crazy great, you know, views that everybody gets all hot and bothered about and all the other stuff. And
you're there to watch a baseball game.
Yeah, to me,
do I need to see downtown in the background? I mean, it would have been fantastic if they could have turned that stadium around the other way. But again, you're still 5 miles away from those big buildings anyway. So, like, had they turned that stadium around, would it really be all that impressive to begin with anyway? No, but the stadium itself, the changes that they've made since opening that blue concrete bowl back in the day, they've made some fantastic changes.
Yeah.
And it is a great stadium. They just need to work on the fan experience and the way they operate at that stadium.
Next time, Danny, we're going to have a bunch of spring training games to talk about. You know, perhaps we might see some of, you know, our starters or maybe our earmarked starters get some innings. Right now, it's been a lot of relievers, as Pedro told us before games even started. That's what we've been getting, you know, and by the time we talk next time, yeah, we might see some guys that we can say, yeah, I know I'll see that guy at 35th and Shields as we move forward. Always a pleasure, buddy, talking with you.
Yeah, you know what, Nick, I again, this is a great form of therapy to be able to sit here and talk White Sox baseball. I know that Chicago, some folks are saying, you know, this crazy weather in February is no good. You know, I am not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, and it feels like baseball should be played when we get 70 degree day like we do today. And probably, you know, after tomorrow being a cold one, it's going to go right back into there for at least another week or so here. I'm looking forward to more baseball.
Yeah, all those high school, college, you know, you're outside practicing now and you're not stuck in a gym somewhere, you know, hitting off a tee or whatever. You're out there getting some, and you're loving this type of weather, that's for sure. So
it feels like
I want to thank everybody for jumping in the chat, watching, tuning in. You can find the audio absolutely everywhere. Head over to Future Sox. Yeah,
handful of new subscribers today.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Check out all the other great stuff happening with Future Sox. That's futuresox.net. He's Danny Miller. I'm Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox.